Yud Tes Teves, 26th December. Start your day the Torah way, combined with Yachid Kala, Northwest London. Rabbi Svi Belofsky.
Good morning. So you have the twin advantage of a dodgy microphone and a short speaker hidden behind the bimah. And so, sitting over there, I'm afraid I can't see what you're doing. I've decided to speak about a subject which straddles the two parshias, Shemois, which we read yesterday, and Vo'era, the week coming, which is the rather strange speech defect of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is emblematic of the state of the Jewish people, the Israelites, in Egypt, Mitzrayim, and also of a transition that is going to happen, beginning last week, taking place through this and the following parshias. You'll recall that we read yesterday that Moshe Rabbeinu, it would appear, superficially rejects the mission that he's given by Kodesh Baruch because he can't speak properly. Lo yish devorim onoichi. I'm not a man of words. Going back yesterday, the day before, I've never been able to speak properly. Ki chvad per uchvad loshoin onoichi. Because literally, I'm heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. And Rashi translates it, I speak slowly, deliberately. I stammer. In the coming parsha of Vayera, the same idea is conveyed, but in a different loshon. Va'ani aral sfosoyim, va'idaber Moshe lifnei Hashem le'emor, near the beginning of the parsha, hein b'nei Yisrael lo yishomu elai, they're not going to listen to me, they won't take any notice of me. Ve'ech yishma eini far, they didn't take any notice of me. So how will Pharaoh take any notice of me? How will he listen to me? Va'ani aral sfosoyim, I am, again, literally of uncircumcised lips, which Rashi translates here, atum sfosoyim. Atum sfosoyim means blocked up, closed up. As he goes on to explain, sloshen orla, v'chein kol l'shoyin orla, ani oimer shehu osum. Rashi says, whenever the word orla is used, and that would apply here in the metaphoric sense, and also later on, when it's used in the halachic sense, it means something which is closed up, something which is inaccessible in some way, closed up. It means he's inarticulate, you might say, in English. I'd like to spend the time exploring the meaning and background to Moshe Rabbeinu's speech defect and how it symbolises the state of the Jewish people and, as I said, the transition that's about to take place for them. So, the Ramban discusses it. He's interested primarily in the rather strange phraseology in Perek Dalad Potter Yud, which we read yesterday. Kimnurai ha'isi chavad peh. I've been a stammerer since my youth. Afki atoki ani zokeini. Even now that I'm old, I've remembered how I've always been. Why, God, would you choose someone who can't speak clearly to be the messenger, to be the conveyor of the message of the divine? It's interesting, the Ramban, it's more background, says Moshe Rabbeinu was so immersed in his desire not to take the job that it didn't occur to him to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take away his speech defect. He named Moshe Berchetzah Shelo Yelech. Moshe so strongly desired not to accept the mission. Lo Yispalel Lofon of Yisporach Shiasir Kad Kvedas Peh. He didn't daven that he should have it taken away. He assumed, I'll paraphrase, that since I have this speech defect, and that's how it's always been, God must not want me to ask to have it removed. Interesting thing in the Ramban is not the interplay. Whose fault is it? Is it God's fault or Moshe Rabbeinu's fault that he still has a speech defect? But more the fact that the Ramban identifies it as the reason he doesn't do it, the real reason, is that, at some sort of psychological level, he doesn't want the mission. It's a good cover. I don't need to take the mission. I can hide behind the speech defect. Now, you probably know, and I'm sure it's taught to every school child, there's a midrash in the first parasha of Shmos Rabbo. A midrash about a coal, a glowing coal. And I think one should understand that this midrash is intended to give some background There's obviously a reason why Moshe Rabbeinu has a speech defect, as we're going to discover shortly. Let's just remind ourselves of the Midrash. That Moshe is a small child. He grows up on the knee of Paro. And Paro loves him. He kisses him and he hugs him. And then who knows he'll kiss Shel Parim Simon Arosha. He grabs the royal crown and he sticks it on his head. Which, if you were not paranoid, like Pharaoh, you would assume it's simply a normal, harmless childhood game. But we know why Paro is paranoid, because he has been told of a vision. His astrologers have told him that from these people, there's going to be a problem. And this problem threatens your throne, it threatens your country. And in fact, the Midrash says, he took the crown, just like he would do when he becomes an adult. That's what's really going on. And the sorcerers of Egypt were sitting there, and they began to express concern that this child may be the one that the astrologers had identified as the troublemaker. So you know what? The best thing to do, says Paro, is to get rid of him. There's a doubt. The best thing is to do away with him. Some said to kill him. But Yisro is sitting there. And Yisro has a very interesting, it's a different shiur. But the role of Yisro as an advisor, how he somehow or other, again, struggles worlds. But Yisro Yoshi B'nei, Yisro is sitting, the Va'oim Elohim, Hanazer Eibo Das, just a kid. You know, he's just playing. You know, don't get too worked up about it. So what we should do is we'll do a test. And again, I'll paraphrase the rest of the Midrash. They bring before him a plate, and in the plate is some gold and some glowing coals. And Yisro says, you know what, if he looks at this and he takes the gold, then you've got a problem on your hands and maybe you're right. But if he takes the glowing coal, well then you can see he was just playing around and just takes the thing that glows that looks exciting. And they do this, and according to the Midrash, he knows exactly what's going on. Sholach yodoi likachazov. He stretches out his hand to take the gold from the plate. And Gavriel comes, a malach, divine intervention, comes and nudges his hand to make sure that he takes the glowing coal, and he takes the coal, and he puts it, ima gacheles, his hand with the gacheles, the toch piv, the nichvel shoinoi. He takes the glowing coal, he puts it in his mouth, and before he can drop it, he burns his tongue. Umimenu, says the Midrash. And from this episode, Naseh kvad per chuvad loshoin, that his inability to speak properly originated from this episode. Now, it's important not to get too hung up on whether this Midrash is intended to be taken literally. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. What's important is not whether it's literal, but the message it's intended to convey. The Midrash feels a need, Chazal feel a need, to provide some kind of background. How is it that he is unable to speak properly? Where does his inability to explain his ideas, to speak clearly, such that he can try and pass off the mission, where does it come from? And this Midrash is trying to identify a source. What is interesting is that most famously in the Droshas Haram, in the Drosh Shlishi, the third Drosha, although he doesn't really talk about this Midrash, he understands that this is not just some unfortunate coincidence, some episode of his childhood. He doesn't just walk around for all his life unable to speak, to remember a nace that happened to him to ensure that he wasn't removed by Paro before he became an adult. The Drosh Saran understands that there is a very important philosophical conceptual reason, and this is really what I'm going to begin properly. The Drosh Saran, first of all, points out that if you were going to elect a leader, someone who would represent HaKadosh Baruch himself, to convey the message, the most important message of history to humanity, you would want someone, as he puts it, she'er sholem b'chol hashleimius, who is perfect in all senses. So why? So that he would be someone that the public would take seriously, someone the people would he would stand before the people and say, oh, this man's a leader. This is someone we can trust. This is the kind of person that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would invest his mission with. And he goes on to explain, particularly when it comes to a prophet. A prophet is someone who's able to speak. He says, Novi means nifsefosayim. Someone who can articulate his words clearly. After all, a prophet is a messenger. Someone who stands there and speaks on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, conveying what God wants to the people. All of this militates against Moshe Rabbeinu as an appropriate leader. And also, presumably, Moshe Rabbeinu himself said, it's not just, according to this reading, it's not just that he feels, I don't want the job, get Aaron, he's my older brother, I want to have a quiet life, choose someone else. He senses in himself, this is going to be a handicap. Why would you choose me? Choose someone else. So the Drosh Saran says something very interesting, having elaborated on that theme. He says it's precisely because the message is so important. It's precisely because HaKadosh Baruch Hu's aim with Matan Torah Har Sinai, his aim is to convey the divine will. It has to be pure. It has to be unadulterated. And most importantly, it is essential that there is no possibility of confusing the message with the messenger. By which he means that if you have someone who is not just powerful, charismatic, handsome, tall, convincing, wealthy, and all the other things that perhaps will be needed to ensure that he was a successful and convincing leader, but he was also an articulate speaker, there's a real fear that the message would get lost with the power of the messenger. And more so, I would add, and I think he's really saying this as well, that with a slave nation of people who we see only a few weeks after Matan Torah can slide away from pure monotheism towards, Chas v'Shalom, some kind of idolatry, there's a fear that people will begin to think that Moshe Rabbeinu himself is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, to preserve the distinction between the message and the messenger, and to preserve the distinction between the Shaliach and the Meshaleach, between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is essential that not only that Moshe Rabbeinu is not 100% perfect in every regard, but Dafke, in this point, in this particular, he must be defective. He must be inarticulate. Because then the only thing you have is the message. He gets the message out, that's the only thing you have. That avoids the possibility of the confusion. According to the Run, presumably, the purpose of the story of the coal is to create a background. The story is interesting. Maybe this happens literally. But if it does, HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineers things this way in order to create a man who has a defect in this area to ensure that there is no possibility of confusing the message with the messenger. That is the famous Drosh HaRam. Certainly, to my knowledge, in the Rishonim, the most important piece that discusses this issue and tries to conceptualize it. That it's important that people will follow the message and not the messenger. It's a very, very important lesson to history. All of us can think very easily of great demagogues, some good, some of the most evil men in history, who have caught people up in the charisma and have been able to persuade even ordinary, fairly sane people to do the most evil things. Here, according to the Ram, it is absolutely essential in the most important communication of history that there is no possibility of having anything other than the message. An interesting perspective. Perhaps equally famously, the Maharal has an entirely different approach. The Ramban's approach is quite pragmatic. It has no esoteric overtones at all. But the Maharal adopts an entirely different strategy you don't know the meaning of the word esoteric, you can ask me afterwards. Now, as we know, the Maharal is fond of conceptualizing things using ideas that are how he has gleaned from Sifrei Kabbalah, and this is no different. The Maharal, in a well-known parak, it's parak Chavches of the Gevuros, discusses this subject in detail, although he does refer to it in other places as well. And he draws on a posuk near the beginning of Bereishis in the second parak, Vayitza Hashem Elokim es Adam, Ofor minhu Adamo, God formed the man dust from the ground, Vayipach ba'apov nishmas chayim, and he breathed into his nostrils the spirit of life, by he Adam lenefesh chayo. It's a difficult phrase to translate, but let's leave it as the man became an animate being. The Targum Onkelos translate the final phrase. It's well known, it's quoted in many places. Unfach ba'apoihi nishmasa dechayo. He breathed into his nostrils the spirit of life. Va'avas ba'odom, and there was in the man L'ruach memalalo. Ruach memalalo literally means the spirit of speech, but I think we'll translate it as the capacity to speak. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed the ruach, the spirit, the neshama, into the inert human being, and he became alive, he gained the capacity of speech. The ability to speak, according to this understanding, is how the Maharal reads it, is a function, use a mathematical term. The ability to speak is a function of the coexistence of the body and soul. When the guf and the neshama are functioning correctly together, then the person is capable of speaking. That is what the Onkelos is conveying. It's clearly not a direct translation of the words. It's an explanation of what it means. And the Maharal plays on this. And he understands, and or paraphrased, don't need to read all of it. First of all, the Moshe Rabbeinu is, as he calls it, Rochok min haChomer. It is a prevalent theme in the writings of the Maharal to look at things through the lens of Chomer and Surah, to look at raw material, the raw material, and the Surah, what you do with it, what it's formed into. He speaks about this in many places in many different ways. And the more distant something is from Chomer, raw material, or Chumrius physicality, the more spiritual it is, the more focused it is. Wood, as a raw material, can have numerous tsurias, many things you can do with it. And he uses these sorts of examples, it's well known. Water, for example, is in the thought of the Maharal the most extreme form of Chomer, because it has no form whatsoever. It takes the form of whatever you put it in. You put it in a bucket, you have bucket-shaped water. You put it in a bowl, etc., etc. That is why, for the Maharal, Moshe Rabbeinu is named, and he, as it were, achieves his existence through a process by which he is removed from water. Kimin amayim mishisihu means that he has been removed from physicality, and his life will symbolize the fact that he hovers, while a physical leader in this world, he is somehow or other above. He rides above the physicality. So illustrated by Rashi Vayarakive or Al Hachamor, how Rashi deals with the Hei Hayidiyah, the unexpected definite article in the Pasuk in yesterday's Parsha. Again, understanding that certain key figures in history, Avram, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Mashiach, ride above Chumrius, above physicality, and they share that property. Moshe Rabbeinu exemplifies this idea. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu lives in a world where his neshama is so elevated, his spiritual potential is so elevated, that it can't connect with the physical. Says the Maharal in Gevuros, this is the meaning of his speech defect. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot speak, not, as the Ran says, as a pragmatic device to ensure to prevent the confusion of the message with the messenger, but as evidence of his greatness. of evidence of the fact that he is barely hovering in this world. That while he lives here, he is so elevated and so beyond physicality that the physical and spiritual don't really meet. And you know what happens if your physical and spiritual don't meet correctly? Then you don't have the fully developed Ruach Mamalala described by Unklus in the creation story. And as such, and the Maharal, as we know very often at the end of his, when he's very pleased with himself, he says, you should understand this very well, this is a very good idea. And in this case he says, Havein zeh ki hu dovah boror. You should understand this, because this is a clear thing. This is the correct understanding, clearly drawing on Inyone Kabbalah. That's how he understands, a completely different approach. And to my knowledge, these are the two primary approaches to conceptualizing this issue. We have the Ran and we have the Maharal. What's interesting is the use of the word Orla. I said at the beginning, he describes himself as Kvad Per Kvad Loshoin. That's in his attempt to evade the mission. And then in this week's parasha, the Torah calls him, with respect, I think, to the, particularly to the depth of the Golas, Aral Sfasayim. He says, I am Aral Sfasayim. But there, it's not with respect to a theoretical mission. It is in the context of the Golas. Aral is a very important word here. There's Sfasemes in Parsha Tevorim, quoting his grandfather, Chiddush HaRim. And he says, I am incapable of bringing that which is latent and actualizing it. Bring something mikoyach el apoyel. I'm incapable of actualizing something, which at a simple level means he may have the most brilliant ideas, the most incredible hasogos, but if he can't articulate them, they remain koyach, and they never become poyel. But I think it's more than that. It's more than Moshe Rabbeinu, who is keneged Klal Yisrael. At this stage, somehow or other, he lives and breathes the Klal. He is the Klal in some kind of symbolic or microcosmic way. And that means that he is a Ral, he is closed up. The Klal Yisrael are currently in a place where they have immense potential. Spiritual potential, national potential. But that potential remains unrealized. He, as it were, becomes a microcosmic Jewish people. And in that sense, they can't express themselves. Of course, very much is a theme. It's not, there isn't time to discuss it in detail. Maybe it's more a Shiva Pasha's boy for Pesach. But of course, it's interesting how much emphasis on the way in which we celebrate the freedom from this condition is by telling a story. V'chol amarbe, harizem shuboch. The mukubolin from the Ari, Pesach. Pesach is about articulation, about expressing ideas, about the speaking mouth. These things are all related. And that's why I would like to suggest that while he begins as kvav peh, that's simply a description of the physical inability, as the golus deepens, which is really a prelude to the beginning of the Makkos, then we see that the Moshe is Orel, he is closed up, he becomes a living, breathing symbol for the Jewish people. To close, Sefer Devorim begins, Eileh HaDevorim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke to Kol Yisrael, and he goes on to identify where. And suddenly, for 5 weeks, he gives the most brilliant, eloquent speech. I think we've wanted to identify the most important speech by a human being in history. We should, I think, say it's Sefer Devorim. Sefer Devorim, because it contains beautiful poetry, warnings, rules, history, Musa. And it's incredibly articulate. And in fact, the Midrash is the first Midrash in Devorim Rabbah. He's worried about this. What happened before? Before he was unable to speak. He can't speak. He's got to have a speaker for him. And suddenly he's speaking. Lo yish Devorim Anochi. The Midrash reminds us. This is the man who says, Lo yish Devorim Anochi. So how do you deal with the discrepancy? The Midrash itself deals with it. Kivin shezochel HaTorah. Once he merited the Torah, Nisra Pilashoinai, his speech defect was healed. So the whole problem, according to this Midrash, is only temporary. Nisrapa l'shoinoi, v'hischa l'daber devorim. And he began to speak eloquently. How do you know this? Minayim emasha karinim ba'inya. How do you know that? Because it says quite clearly. That's what Sefer Devarim says. Eila Devarim Hashem Dibei Moshe. The first lines of Devarim Rabbah. Worrying about the discrepancy. All the things you've said so far. So, Rav Huttner, in Pesach Maimah Tesvov, speaks about this inyan. And he uses many of the ideas, a lot of Rav Huttner's ideas, although highly original, often based on the Maharal, and it's likely that he would have adopted a Maharal-type approach to this sort of issue. And he says, Oysa peh sha'omel lifnei matan Torah, that very mouth that said the words before matan Torah, lo yish devorim anoichi, I'm not a man of words, was able to say after Matan Torah, Eilad Devorim, the word Torah can say about him, he's an eloquent speaker suddenly. Because Matan Torah nishava chibur chodosh ben elyonim v'tachtoinen. Because Matan Torah represents, we'll say it in kind of more flowery terms first, Matan Torah represents the connection of a profound nature between the supernal and terrestrial worlds. That's what it actually represents. That somehow or other the mind of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able, by some miraculous means, to meet this world. That the physical and spiritual can combine. And of course the objective of Matan Torah is to create a system of law such that it's possible to experience spirituality in this world. The whole function, that's what it's about. To learn to live a meaningful existence, according to the Rotson of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in this world. That's what it's about. That means that at a conceptual level, Matan Torah is about physical and spiritual coming together. And when the physical and spiritual come together, we know what happens. People can speak. But at a more mundane level, you might say, it's very simple. Moshe Rabbeinu's body, his physicality, representing the physicality of all of Klal Yisrael, they ascend the mountain. And when he ascends the mountain for Matan Torah, to bring to the world the most important communication of history, in which the physical and spiritual worlds will be combined, it is self-evident that his body, as it were, when it reaches the top of the mountain, would meet his soul. And when his body and soul come in contact with each other the first time, he becomes an Ish Devorim. Have a good day.